Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. My name is Tim, and we're happy you could join us today. The topic of our podcast, this episode, is the story of Jack the Stripper, or also known as the Hammersmith Murders, a series of murders that took place in the Hammersmith District of West London back in the mid-1960s. The newspapers dub the killer as Jack the Stripper, as his victims were all found strangled to death and nude. The culprit has never been identified. We're going to talk about, so it's officially is an open case. It remains unsolved. We're going to talk about some of the suspects. But before we talk about Jack the Stripper's dastardly deeds, I would like to introduce, as always, my panel. I'm very happy to be joined today for this is our first podcast in 2017.
It is.
Yeah. I can't believe you hit that memory thing, and we've been doing this 2 years now, Timmy.
Yeah, later this
So
month.
This is our first episode of our third season.
Well, kind of. It was like mid-January.
Yeah.
It was kind of
third season.
We got renewed for another season.
Did we? Or do we just keep plugging away?
Libsyn renewed us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Imagine that. Libsyn will keep taking our money.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Although, you know, maybe we're doing this, going about this in the wrong way. Maybe we should ask for Patreon support to not podcast.
Yeah, I bet we get
more support.
Yeah.
Let me introduce our my co-host, who's very lovely, very talented, the queen of mean, the empress of evil, the mistress of the macabre, Satan's dirty little secret, pill poppin' and penis lovin', Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm okay, Timmy. How are you?
I am doing well. This is our first podcast of 2017. I'm so glad that we're done with the Charlie Manson podcast.
Yeah, but are we? Because, you know, it looks like he's getting ready to kick it.
Well, you know, if he breaks out and he kills 15 people, we'll get some other podcast going to have to cover it, because I'm done with Charlie Manson. I am over Charlie. I am just done with him.
Jeez.
Tired of
you
Charlie.
You know, do you think Dan Rather says that? Do you think Walter Cronkite would have said
I'm
that?
I'm tired of Watergate. Yeah, I don't want no more Watergate.
No more of that. Yeah.
No more Lindbergh's baby. I don't care about Lindbergh's baby.
They probably wouldn't have, but regardless, yeah, Charlie is under the weather. As you mentioned, he is in the hospital. And the hospital is like 60 miles from the prison. I wonder why they have to go so far. You look like
because nobody cares if the prisoners get sick.
Well, I know,
and
but
they've
I'm
got
just
their
saying,
own infirmary there.
Maybe, or they just got contract with them. You think or something? It just seems like it's a long way.
They've got an infirmary there. That then, if it gets too much for them to handle, you know, they handle prison fights and those kind of stitches and that.
Yeah, imagine it's. I mean, they won't tell you anything, but imagine it's somewhat serious if they move him off of...
I would think so.
Yeah.
I don't think you move Charlie Manson lightly.
No.
You don't move that crazy ass much.
And, you know, this is the one time we can't give our thoughts and prayers, Timmy.
Nope.
No thoughts and prayers
No thoughts and prayers.
No thoughts and prayers to Charlie. Okay. All right. So, Brandy, you doing all right? How was your New Year's?
It was very, very quiet.
I see Noah is still protesting that he did not get a cannon for Christmas.
He is, but I appreciate everybody's donations and kind words.
I'm surprised social services hasn't shown up. And
well, you know, it is, you know, you really should consider a cannon for the young man. He seems very responsible, five-year-old.
He does.
And you don't know when your house is going to get sieged.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, when the Huns are at the gate.
When the Huns are at the door, you're going to be thinking, I wish I had a cannon.
I probably will. When the zombie apocalypse happens, I will probably be wishing that we had a cannon. Yeah. Right now, we don't get a lot of pirates in my neighborhood where we would need a cannon.
Well.
And I actually think he wants to shoot himself out of it, but I don't think he understands the
implications
or the I don't think he gets that. That's a whole thing.
Can you really shoot yourself out of a cannon? Doesn't someone else have to shoot you out?
I don't know. See,
unless you have something like a selfie stick, you can a long match.
I don't know. How do you practice that?
Well, I mean,
what happens if you screw it up?
I always have little brothers.
I always wondered about that, about ski jumping. Like, who was that first guy? Yeah. I said,
you know, it's a good idea.
I think I could do this.
I think this will be an Olympic sport someday. Jump off the side of a mountain.
Let's try this.
Yeah. No. Well, I'm sorry that Noah did not get a cannon.
We wouldn't change the password on his tablet.
Well, now that's just being
a tyrant.
Yeah. He knows the password on his tablet. It's not like we kept it from him. He knows it. He was just being a peckerhead. Well, we need to change it. I'm not changing it.
Well, he's probably heard about, you know,
the Russians. Russian hackers.
Yeah.
Trying to protect himself.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't want them to get in and mess with his Angry Birds or whatever it is that he.
Yeah. Goat simulator. He simulates being a goat.
Really?
This is his favorite thing in the world.
I met a woman.
No.
Okay.
I bet you did.
Let me just say.
No, I bet he did, but I don't think it's a story we want to put out there.
We're all too young for that story.
I would also like to introduce the moral compass of the podcast. A man that really needs no introduction. The most dangerous man in podcasting today, the very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm good, Timmy. I had a good New Year. I had a harrowing day yesterday. It was horrible. It was harrowing.
Your first day back to work, is that one?
No, Timmy, it's going to come as a surprise to some of our listeners because most of them think the colonel, bold, courageous, fearless, whatnot.
Nobody thinks that.
And I will tell you something personal about myself that I don't share with most people, Timmy.
Okay, do that, Colonel. Believe me, if you're sharing it on this podcast, most people are not going to hear it.
Well, that's true. I'm deathly afraid of bridges.
Oh, really?
Deathly afraid of bridges.
Well, you probably was uncomfortable during our jumper episode, wasn't you?
That didn't bother me so much. But yesterday, Timmy, I'm coming home, and you know I got to go across the Western Hills Viaduct.
That's here in Cincinnati.
Right here in Cincinnati. It's on my way home. It's about probably 100 foot off the ground. It's pretty high, 100, 125 feet, whatever. And it's a four-lane bridge. And the cars in front of me, a car changed lanes right in front of me. And hit the car in front of me.
Oh.
And which in turn blocked both lanes, Timmy.
Oh, so you were stuck on that.
So I was trapped on a bridge. And by the time I got off the bridge, it's usually, you know, it doesn't bother me. It's a 30-second drive across a bridge. Last night I spent 20 minutes on said bridge, Timmy. And I literally could feel, I had my windows rolled down. It was about 58 degrees last night.
Literally?
I literally had sweat running down the back of my neck.
You had a panic attack.
Yeah, from being on the bridge. I just could not, my hands were shaking. You could have thrown a rattlesnake in my car. If a ninja would have jumped in my car, if ISIS would have jumped in the back of my car, it wouldn't have concerned me like being on that bridge.
I was stuck
makes
on that.
Makes you a little bit of a wuss.
Now, I was stuck on that same bridge one time, and I had a panic attack. And it was just because the traffic was backed up. But You're right. It's a bad place to hang.
And I learned something interesting over the thing. You know, my kids, we've only spent $400,000 or whatever for them to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I said something about, I seen a picture of a pirate and he had a little parrot on his shoulder, and I raised the question I believe you raised, is if you lost one eye, why in the fuck would you put something on your shoulder with a sharp ass beak to pluck out the other eye?
I don't believe I asked that question. Okay. I
never heard you ask that question.
Okay, well, it's an obvious question. Every time you see a pirate with a parrot and a patch, I mean, you got to wonder to yourself, why would you have the parrot on your shoulder? Because he could just pluck out the good eye.
I have never wondered that, and I'm deathly afraid of birds. And I've never wondered. I've wondered why it's there in the first place, but I never thought it would.
A parrot is a pirate's best friend.
Huh?
A parrot is a pirate's best friend.
Yeah, but parrots have big mouths.
But my son, Taylor.
Parrots be testifying.
And my son Taylor, who, you know, we spent half of this $200,000, $400,000 going to college, said, Dad, pirates don't wear patches because they lost their eye. You know that, right? I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
He said pirates had to go, you know, they were up on top deck where it was very sunny, and they had to go below deck where it was very, very dark. He said what they would do is they would switch the patch, because the one eye that had been covered could adjust to the dark immediately, and the other eye took 5-10 minutes to be able to adjust to the dark on the deck.
Okay. Interesting theory.
Sounds to me like some smart-ass kids.
I had to look it up on Google. He wasn't bullshitting me. He was right about that. I thought he was, because, you know how I'll give an answer sometimes and with full confidence. And
not know what you're talking about.
Not know what I'm talking about. I thought he was just making it up. It turns out to be true. Pirates wore patches because to run below deck and be able to run. And you know what happened?
Women don't make passes to pirates.
Guys that wear patches. Yeah. That's true.
Speaking of women, Timmy.
Yes.
I got two things. First of all, I got to clear up. My mama and my sister, both my sisters actually, were redheads. So I have nothing against redheads. I just know how scary they can be. That's all.
He made some offensive comments about redheads.
I don't believe that was offensive. I think that was accurate. And secondly, you know, on another page, I won't name the page, somebody called me a sexist.
Well, I feel like that's long overdue.
I mean, called a colonel a sexist.
Can you believe that?
That's no.
Just unimaginable, colonel.
No, and as if I would care about some dumb girl's opinion anyway.
Right.
Some stupid broad.
What? Yeah.
There you go.
Go protest somewhere else. I ain't got time for you. But, I thought that was offensive. It's bothered me ever since.
Well, you know, you could apologize now.
No.
Apologize for what?
Exactly.
All right. Are you ready to talk about this topic?
I'm ready because somebody performed some dastardly deeds, Timmy.
They did.
Don't know who, but we got some ideas.
Right. This is an unsolved mystery. But before we jump into the story very quickly, I would like to thank those of you who sponsor us on Patreon. If you would like to sponsor us on Patreon, please go to patreon.com/historydweebs. And there you can pledge your support. You can pledge a little, a lot, or?
Oh, just a wee little tiny bit.
All of it helps, and we appreciate it very, very much. So big shout out to Alicia and Chip, to Jen Moyer, Brandy McBride, Annette Petre, there in New York City, Lise over there in Norway, Leslie Hager, Amber Scoville, Jahara, Andrew Happ, Amber Trevino, Mandy Swanson, Jennifer Siemens, of course, and her mother, Linda, and Jennifer's son, Hunter. Thank you very much. We appreciate it, guys. Bridget Clavey. Bridget's been with us a long time, and we really appreciate your support, Bridget. Cindy Liu's been with us a long time as well. Thank you, Cindy. Heather Poole. Thank you, Heather, for your contributions. Charlie and Allie from the Insight podcast, who we're going to get to meet next June at the Crime Con in Indianapolis. Thank you guys very much. And if you get a chance and you haven't listened to Insight, by all means, check that out. And Jason Dykes. Jason, thank you for your very generous donation. And also Rudy, the Wonder Dog. So
it was Rudy's birthday the other day. Did I mention that?
Yes, we did a whole episode on it on the show.
We did?
Okay. Yes.
And you weren't here.
We don't get to do two.
No.
Maybe it was in my imagination, but that's good enough.
I think we ought to do an episode on Rudy.
No.
I think the listeners want more Rudy, less devil.
No, you know what? I want to say something on a side note of things that make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock came back on after like a year of it being off.
Okay.
BBC. Check it out. It makes me happy. Puts me in a good mood. I have Sherlock to look forward to on my DVR.
Is there anybody hot on there? Does the BBC show boobs?
No, they
Watson
don't.
Is pretty hot.
Watson, that's who I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Watson's the same little guy that played a hobbit. I mean, he's a cute guy, but he's not hot.
Which one's got
Sherlock's hot.
Maybe Korean girl on it.
Elementary, the one that's on
the
TV.
I like
no.
She's kind of hot though.
Korean women are hot.
She's
Lucy
hot.
Lou. He likes some Lucy Lou.
Oh, it's Lucy Lou. Is that who it is?
Yeah. Now,
there's hotter Koreans though.
PBS though. It's on PBS, BBC on PBS. It's wonderful.
Never had any luck dating Koreans, though.
I'm sorry? Because they have standards? Or
No, I don't know.
You don't think that's it?
Well, they may have standards, but apparently...
I've never dated a Korean.
Shocking.
I've offered him kimchi and everything. And
I don't know what kimchi is. So.
It's cabbage.
Maybe.
Well. Oh, well.
I don't think that works. They're beautiful. Very, very smart. I've never had any luck with them. So if you're an attractive Korean woman and would like to hook up with a slightly balding middle-aged podcaster with a pension coming up.
A healthy pension.
And minimal life goals.
And minimal life expectancy. Inbox me, please. All right. So Jack the Stripper. Okay. Hammersmith is a district in West London, Colonel. I know you knew that.
Well, I do know that, and I'll tell you why, Timmy. Because
God damn it, who cares why?
Bruce Springsteen played his seminal show in Hammersmith.
He had a seminal show? That's gross.
He's using that.
So gross.
I think he learned that word because he's used that line like the last three podcasts, so he must have learned it on Word of the Day.
I don't think that word means what you think it means. It's like facials.
Yeah. Watch your facials.
But I do know where it's at because, yes, he did play. It's Hammersville Odeon. It's probably the most famous of his live concerts.
Okay. That's great, Colonel.
I forgot to give a fuck about that today.
Yes. So Hammersmith, as I said, is a district in West London. I'm sure Lady Beverly knows about.
I'm sure she does.
Lady Beverly knows all.
She does. It's located in the London borough of Hammersmith and Fulham. I'm probably screwing up that word.
Probably.
Maybe. The area is one of West London's key commercial and employment centers and has for decades been a major center of London's Polish community. By the way, Colonel, did you know that most of the RAF in the Second World War, well, maybe not most, but a large percentage of the RAF during the Blitz in World War II was made up of Polish pilots.
Mm-hmm. I did know that, Tim.
Yeah.
Of course he knew that.
I know. Why do I even ask?
Fucking Cliff.
Well, I mean, they had a huge Polish population. Polish people.
Well, no, a lot of them were escaping. The Nazis.
You know what the average life expectancy of an RAF pilot was?
I bet you know.
17 minutes, Timmy.
Yeah, they didn't live very long, but they...
So
few have given so much for so many. All right. Back to my story.
They could build a plane faster than they could keep a pilot.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing.
So back to Hammersmith.
I want to slit my own throat.
It was the major transport hub for West London. The two London Underground stations and a bus station at Hammersmith Broadway. Can you paint a picture here, Colonel?
It's a lovely one, Timmy.
Like me.
You're like Monroe.
Like many areas of the cities of the city.
Bob Ross of podcasting.
It had its problems with crime, including drugs and prostitution, Colonel.
It was the opium back then.
I know you don't approve of prostitution.
No, I think prostitution should be legal. If prostitution will be legal, aren't these women that we're talking about here mostly prostitutes?
All of them are, yeah.
if prostitution were legal, they could be working in a safe house and they'd all be alive.
Okay. In 1964 and 1965, these problems that we were talking about included a serial killer, Colonel.
Now, see, that's where you got a problem.
Yeah.
I ain't got no problem with prostitution, but the serial killing, that's when you're going a step too far. I'm a liberal, open-minded guy.
Yeah, I know. 75 years after Jack the Ripper murdered and disemboweled prostitutes in London's East End, other side of town, a new generation of prostitutes learned to live with the ever-present fear of a lurking killer.
Don't they live in fear most of the time?
I don't think so. I mean, it's certainly a high-risk occupation for a number of reasons, but, most of them seem okay with it, you know?
I think it depends on what kind of prostitute you are.
Kind
for sex?
These are street prostitutes, so.
Yeah, these are
higher risk than probably someone who's doing.
Someone that you would call.
Yeah, in, you know, is doing out call or whatever at the local Days Inn.
Wow. I was thinking La Quinta Inn.
La Quinta sucks, man. I hate staying there. I stayed there at La Quinta in Indianapolis one time, and I swear to God, I was afraid to go out and get ice at the ice machine. It was just so shady looking.
It was.
So anyway, this Jack, talking about the killer, he didn't carry a knife, but he was every bit as lethal, claiming at least 6 victims to Jack the Ripper's 5. And he possessed far greater longevity. Jack the Ripper, for all his dastardly deeds, he only done that over a 10-week period.
He was almost a spree killer.
Yeah. Whereas Jack the Stripper, as he would be known here in the mid 1960s on London's West End, he operated over nearly 6 years. He would kill 6 women, and there's a possibility that it was as high as it was as high as 8 victims, because there was 2 that they're just unsure if he was involved with or not, but could have been. So as many as 8 victims. So he outdid Jack the Ripper in any case, but he didn't get the pub as Jack the Ripper.
He didn't, and he was more dastardly.
I'm not sure about that. Jack the Ripper disemboweled his.
Yeah, but once you do something to somebody who's dead, it doesn't make you more dastardly. It's
well, how if many you disembowel them while they're alive.
Well, that's just rude.
It is rude. It's uncalled for, really.
It's unnecessary.
At the end of the day, though, both killers shared a common attribute. Despite a wealth of theories and assertions, neither of these Jacks, he's that uncle, he can get drunk and he call everyone Jack.
Yes.
Someday you're not going to be able to live with mom and dad, Jack. You're going to have to get out there and earn a living, Jack.
Lillian cannot use the phone.
No phone for you. No, you cannot use a phone, Lillian.
Anyway, the killer would become known as Jack the Stripper because most of his victims were found nude and posed in graphic positions. Which was
kind of feel like anytime you're nude, unseemly. You're in a graphic position.
I kind of
feel like when you're nude.
Well, I don't know. You could be in a very modest nude position, like you have your hands covering your coochie or something.
My hands ain't big enough for that, Timmy.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a coochie now.
My junk, Tim.
Your accoutrement?
My appendage.
And we wonder why we get reviews saying that we're vulgar. In the mid-1960s, this area of London feared that he would kill again. Women lived in fear that they had the potential to be the monster's next victim. Quite unseemly.
It is unseemly.
All the victims were working as prostitutes and died when their killer, dubbed Jack the Stripper, strangled or choked them during sex. Brandy.
Yes.
You ever get choked, strangled during sex?
Do you?
Well, I not as a rule, but...
Like not choking on your own spit or anything, but like...
I have...
I know there's so many places to go with that.
Nothing kills the mood like
but
getting,
you know what? What
like getting and
I don't get,
spit.
You know, the Colonel, I'm a worldly man. I see things on the internet or whatnot.
But yes, what, you worldly.
There he is.
We have Google.
What is with just, it's become almost a routine thing now. What is with choking women? When I'm making these
well,
movies,
depends.
And
if you ask my husband,
well, yeah, I understand that.
Well, we understand your case because you're running your mouth.
Yeah,
all the time.
It just won't.
But like as a
while you're trying to
thrill.
Have sex and you're talking about the lawn needing cut, and he's, hey, would you shut up? But no, I'm just saying, have you noticed it's gotten more demeaning to women?
Are you speaking of pornographic movies?
I am. I am.
Oh, some women like it. I mean, I think some women like being,
I could imagine myself just wrapping my hands around the throat of Mrs. Colonel while we're in the throes of passion.
Wait.
I do not see that.
Is she aware that you're in the throes of passion? Because I think you have to start
there. She's in the throes watching Madam Secretary on her iPad.
Right, okay.
But,
well, see, that's a different story. Yeah. I'm just saying there's some women who are into, and some men who are into rough sex. So
rough is one thing. Choking somebody is
well,
another
I don't,
thing.
Yeah,
altogether.
There's degrees of choking, right? I mean, you can do play acting or you could really choke someone. He was really choking them. The killer has never been identified, and the case remains unsolved. Several prostitutes were slain in secret and left on display in gruesome displays of power and control. So he had this whole...
Well, it's good he did it in secret, because had he done it out in the open, they'd have probably caught him pretty quick.
People frown on that.
Like I said, he killed six women. Some believed the death toll was higher and was at least eight. But a couple of the deaths were quite earlier. It happened a few years earlier, and they had a different MO as the other six. So that's why they're not sure that whether it was six people he killed or eight, or hell, it could have been more. But at least six people.
Could be six, could be eight, could be 27.
Mm-hmm. But at least six were victims or contributed to Jack the Stripper. And,
well,
and it occurred in 1964 and 1965, over a 12-month period. And it was in the Hammersmith District, as I mentioned, in and around. I'm going to say this for Brandy because she's going to screw it up.
Okay.
It's the River Thames, Brandy, not Thames. The River Thames. Just. So, you know.
Thames.
Really?
The River Thames.
You hillbilly. You're going to tell me how to pronounce something?
The victims were all found without any clothing or with very little clothing over a 12-month period from 1964 to 1965.
And that's, you know, that's only the number of bodies that were found.
Yeah, and like we said, this is still an open case. So there's limited.
We
amount.
May crack it before this podcast.
We probably
over.
Won't, but there's a limited. I mean, it's really hard to get a lot of good information on it because
he's setting his sights low for us.
Yeah,
because it's an open case. So
by the end
of
this podcast, I'm going to tell you who did it to me.
You, Colonel, your part has a very interesting suspect. So
I read it.
I think perhaps,
I watched a YouTube video of this.
Yeah, I know. His name was. Harold Jones, and he's an interesting character. He was a child killer, and by that I mean he killed children, but he also was a child when he did it.
Yeah, he was a child killer.
So
child gonna, child
so
killer.
So actually, what he needs is you don't even need to read your part now.
No, no, no. No. It's a long, fascinating story.
When he got out of
we won't talk about it right now.
I'm just telling you who he was married to because she's been on some other podcasts.
Okay,
Mythic Joan.
Some other podcasters. So there's that.
Okay.
Me and Mithy Jones.
Randy, tell us a little bit about the murders.
The murders.
Most dastardly.
So the first one was Hannah Talford.
I like that name, Hannah Talford.
She was.
Did she have any sisters?
Hannah, I don't. Like it Hannah doesn't say. Sisters, oh. I know. Big old Woody Allen fan. Mm-hmm. She was a 30-year-old prostitute. She was born in Lancashire.
Lancashire.
She was born into a Lancashire.
That's a little long in the tooth for a prostitute.
Mining family.
You know what kind of accent that British prostitutes have, Colonel?
What kind?
Cockney.
That's a good one, Jim.
I mean, we're very big with the 12-year-old demographic. Yeah. 12-year-old boy demographic.
Right. Okay, so she was actually found close to the Hammersmith Bridge on February 2nd, 1964. Her naked corpse was discovered in the Thames by a boatman. Her stockings were pulled down around her ankles. Panties were stuffed inside her mouth, but she had drowned. And the inquest produced an open verdict, refusing to rule out suicide, however improbable it seemed. And several of her teeth were missing. You know, when people commit suicide, I don't think they stuff their own underwear in their mouth.
Well, I'm going to might, just to throw everyone off.
They might, but it just seems...
Well, and maybe she was unconscious, but you know what strikes me? I'm guessing she was unconscious.
I'm guessing if you had your choice of your last meal, it's not going to be your underwear.
But if somebody threw you in the river and you was conscious and you was drowning, the first thing you'd do is spit out your underwear.
You'd think.
Yeah, so she was probably unconscious when she hit the water.
The second victim was...
Colonel, you should have been a detective.
Which would have ruled out suicide because unless she stuffed her underwear in the mouth, whacked herself over the head with a boat oar...
I think being strangled also kind of rules out suicide.
You would think.
Yeah. It's hard to strangle yourself.
It is. It is. Because about the time you get ready to really
do
yourself in...
Didn't David Carradine do that, though?
Well, yeah, autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, but it was a rope. He didn't manually try
it. It was a whole Acme contraption.
Yeah.
Set up. And it kills me because he did it in Bangkok. And it was like, you can do anything you want in Bangkok for $25 with, you know, it's not, you know, there's 400,000 prostitutes in the city. Yet he chooses to go
solo.
Cheap bastard.
Is Bangkok where they got the sturdy built women are attacking people?
No,
one
it's
night
Hong
in
Kong.
Bangkok.
Hong Kong. Okay.
One night in Bangkok makes a hard man humble.
It will make a humble man hard too.
Let's see. Irene Lockwood was discovered over 2 months later on April 8th, 1964. She was found naked and dead in the Thames, floating 300 yards from the spot where Talford was found. Another drowning victim, she was 4 months pregnant. Police, being the crack detectives that they were, established that both deaths were linked. A local caretaker, Kenneth Archibald, confessed to Irene's murder at the end of April, but owing to inconsistencies in his account, it was dismissed as not being credible. What a doofus.
I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. All these stories we do, they usually have at least one or two people who do false confessions, and I don't understand that.
Attention whore.
Well, I guess you're attention whore, but you know, the downside of getting a little attention is that you end up in the electric chair.
Well, you know, but
you get that last meal.
But you get
meal.
Attention.
You do get attention.
And you can, some you of
get
it might
sweet
be
sweet ass last meal.
Well, some might say, you know, you get that sweet ass attention.
Yeah, sweet ass attention. Yeah. No, you don't get that on death row. They keep you isolated from everybody. You don't have human interaction.
I don't think that's true. I think there's time when they're out in the yard or when they're
well,
doing
and
there
aren't
together.
There are other people on death row, right? I mean, most, so you may not be in a cell with someone, but you're nearby. You can, you know.
You can flop your willy down a cell and...
You don't know.
You can do pretty much... Don't,
that's one thing you don't know.
No, but I saw those like the Supermax. Mm-hmm. Inside those Supermax, man, they're very limited what they can
Neither
do.
One of you have any steps in for the past hour, so
I like
just
how they. I like
down.
How they pass notes in prison when they're in
that...
On
that string?
Line. Yeah.
Oh. It's crazy.
I think we should try that here.
I don't think we could do it.
I don't think
we can text.
The carpet would mess us up.
We can text...
We can't text.
Yeah, we can't text. But let's just do that.
So the third victim was Helen Barthelemy. She was 22 years old when her nude body was found April 24th, 1964, less than a week after Irene Lockwood's body was discovered. One less than a week, but that's okay. This time, her body was discovered in an alleyway in Brentford. It was this crime scene that gave detectives their first real clue. Specks of paint were discovered close to the body, which were determined to have been used in the production of motor vehicles. Detectives believed their suspect might be a paint sprayer.
Fucking paint sprayer.
Or maybe it's just a car enthusiast.
Lanny.
Lanny.
Mm-hmm. Lanny. Lanny. You're going to be living in a van down by the river with a paint sprayer named Lanny. What? Dave's going to get tired of you.
I don't think...
He only works 20 hours a week at Pet
I don't think any of those things are going to happen.
Yeah, that doesn't even pay for his heroin. No.
What the fuck?
He ain't got no teeth.
Really?
I'm just saying.
But, so you all are assuming that being the person that I am, I'm going to go for a heroin-addled, part-time working guy that lives in a van down by the river named Lanny.
You ain't getting no younger, I'm just saying.
He's got his hair greased back.
He got his hair slicked back.
Yeah, first of all, he's a redhead too.
Ginger.
He's a ginger.
You're both.
He puts on that Old Spice.
You're both going to die
alone. High karate. Yeah. He's still got high karate.
What is that? What is it? What's the stuff? What's the stuff from Anchorman?
Oh.
That's not Panther Piss. Yeah. We've talked about this before. I don't remember what it is, but yeah, 80% of the time, it works 100% of the time.
Yeah.
What is it called?
Back to the story.
Oh, you know, hush up.
I'm the director. Back to the story.
Yeah, well. Then Mary
Fleming. I need me a little director chair, a little director's beret, and one of the megaphones.
Well.
And one of those boards. Snapboards.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I think.
You need a clapboard, yeah.
Clapboard. He already had the clap.
He's already got the clap, yeah. So when Mary Fleming, 30, was discovered on July 14th, 1964, in an open street nearby Chiswick, many locals reported hearing a vehicle, probably a car.
Most often they are, but it might have been a truck, may have been a van, may have been a moped.
You know, sometimes you can't tell between the truck.
A vehicle.
But not only could they tell it was probably a car, it was reversing down the street shortly before her body was discovered.
See, that's suspicious. When you drive your car in reverse down the street.
Backwards, yeah.
It draws attention, Colonel.
Yeah. More specks of paint were discovered at the scene.
Especially if you're on a freeway. It really draws attention.
Sex Panther, devil.
Sex Panther. Sex Panther. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fleming was originally from Scotland. So she was from the Highlands.
She was Scottish, and she probably drank a bit, but nothing wrong with that.
She probably had red hair.
If she had red hair, she drank.
And there it goes. Francis Brown.
You set him up, don't you?
Francis Brown was a 21-year-old prostitute from Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yeah, another Scottish lass.
Francis was last seen alive by her friend, Kim Taylor, on October 23rd, 1964. Just over a month later, on November 25th, her naked body was discovered in an alleyway in Kensington.
Alleyway.
Alleyway. It's an alleyway, mate.
No. So here's the thing. Let me tell you the difference. I recognize when I make a mistake. Other people on this podcast fuck it up and just keep on moving. Alleyway in Kensington. Miss Taylor was able to provide a composite of the man who picked her up, as well as a description of the car he was driving. Kim thought it was either a Ford Zephyr or a Zodiac. Well, you can't really tell between the two.
What the hell's a Zodiac?
I don't know. I'm guessing it's some kind of British automobile.
It's like a Pinto. No, it was a Ford.
Oh, it was a
Ford Zodiac?
You wrote it. I said it. Right. Ford.
I'm going to Google it.
Go ahead. And so my
maybe
guess
he's
is,
a Zodiac
it's probably
killer.
Like the Pinto.
Yeah.
Well, this is 64, so.
It's a Gremlin.
You know something interesting?
Nope.
Is that you could not buy a new model vehicle during the Second World War in the United States. Mm-hmm. It was 1949 before you could buy a new car.
Didn't know that.
1940 to 1949, you could buy a new car.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah. I'd like to educate our listeners.
Because the production was all geared toward aircraft and tanks and bullets. Yeah. And
it wasn't the same in Germany. They continued to make cars because they didn't want the people on the home front to suffer.
They made the Volkswagen Beetles.
Well, yeah, the people's car. But they didn't want. They didn't want him. To
microbuses.
Oh, this is a sweet ride, man.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have to put that on the
what
page.
What is that? It's a Zodiac. That's
yeah,
nice.
Ford Zodiac. Sweet. Got the fins.
Jack's last known victim was Bridget O'Hara. Bridget was a 28-year-old redhead born in Ireland.
Uh-oh, Colonel.
Known as Bertie, she was found behind the Heron Trading Estate inside a shed. More paint traces were found at the scene, only this time they were linked to a transformer mere yards from her body.
They should have looked, when they was looking for the killer, they should have looked for somebody with the eyes scratched out.
Well, which transformer was there? Was it Bumblebee? Was it Optimus Prime?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Because this guy keeps fucking around with redheads. You know he took some.
He's got something. He's
so you're saying basically they should just, all the redheads, they should just write it up to justifiable homicide.
No, I'm saying
redheads. That sounds like what you're saying.
No,
to me.
I'm saying redheads don't go down easy if he took down these redheads.
Now you're looking for a guy with one eye.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
There were signs that she'd been stored in a warm environment, perhaps as a result of the Transformers' presence, because they are very friendly.
Well, Transformers are warm.
Yes. In addition to the five known victims of Jack the Stripper, or Striper, as Tim has written here, people believe that there are two other possible victims of the crazed killer.
That's a fish in the River Thames, Jack the Striper.
You know, spell check will not pick up a word if you spell it in a correct
way. Here's an interesting thing.
No.
No, it's not. This is just a quick one about Ted Bundy.
10 words or less.
His uncle was a...
Nope.
State policeman in one of the states that they had
his uncle was Al Bundy.
And, no, his uncle was looking. They had found the weirdest thing is that they had found this body, but it was decomposed in one part much more than the other part.
Okay.
And they found half of it was far more decomposed than the other.
I'm going to buy me one of these things, Ford Zodiacs. They're kind of sweet. Sweet ride.
And the body had tiny hair clippings all over it.
Okay.
So they were thinking he killed her and stored her at a barbershop. And, you know, the sunlight came through and blah, 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 blah. One day the I forget how he was related, I believe it was an uncle, was walking down the steps of a cabin he had.
Mm-hmm.
And saw the sunlight coming in and how it filled up half the room and realized that Bundy had stored one of his victims in the basement of that cabin.
You know when it would be a wonderful time to talk about that is when we do a podcast on Ted Bundy. But right now, we're doing one on Jack the Stripper.
When you're right, you're right.
Yeah. Thank you, Brent.
Okay. I'm just Striper. Trying to... Just trying to...
Jack the Striper.
Just trying to fill some time.
You know, they originally called him Jack the Striper, but it didn't install fear in people.
No, it didn't. It did not install fear at all. Or instill it.
Install fear. I had to go to the dealership to get some fear installed in me.
That's right.
Continue, Brandy. This is ridiculous.
They put it right by the carburetor.
Yeah. Can I get some fear?
You guys will be jostling I come cruising in with my Ford Zodiac.
I bet they'll install fear on that. I bet it comes factory. That's factory issued fear is what that
man.
Is.
Oh, man. I'm going to get me some dice, fuzzy dice for this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. So there was a couple other possible victims. One of them was Elizabeth Figg. Her murder predated the stripper's official victims by 5 years.
Yeah, that's the one. We said there was a couple that were earlier on.
Yeah, she was discovered on June 17th, 1959. She was a prostitute. She was 21, floating in the River Thames, dressed only in a slip. Her death was attributed to strangulation.
What is really the purpose of a slip, Colonel?
So you don't see their underwear through a dress.
Yeah. Well, so you can wear a slinky dress.
Why not let your underwear be seen?
Because you can wear any color underwear you want.
Maybe they don't wear underwear. Maybe that's why
they wear black underwear, a white slip, a white dress. Nobody cares. Nobody's seeing through it.
Yep. Oh, so they mix match? You mean they can mismatch?
Yeah.
Yeah, women got, I don't know.
Well, instead of wearing a slip.
A little out of style.
Wearing a slip, why don't you just wear nice underwear?
Well, I don't think it's that they're wearing raggedy underwear. I think it's just they're wearing devil.
No, the slip helps create a smoother line. And yeah.
Do you
don't, women don't
match
wear
your bra and your underwear
anymore,
every day?
Not much anymore. No.
Doesn't matter.
I'm married.
To you. Okay, I just because
yeah, see, that's,
know,
a big,
women crazy.
That's a big turnoff. When
there
women,
are people, there are people
women
that are like
don't,
that
don't match their underwear. It's a big turnoff for us guys.
You know what? Well, here's the thing.
When you
ready to pop the question, the jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Colonel.
First of all,
I will not sleep with a woman that has mixed match.
Yes, you will.
Renee owns 47 pair of black underwear, 47 black bras, and maybe 5 pair of white underwear and 5 white bras. Uh-huh. I don't know that I've seen other colors on her.
But does she ever mix and match?
I haven't seen her mix and match.
Well, she's a lady.
She is a lady.
Look, here's the thing.
So sluts wear the different ones.
Yeah, it is.
Underoos.
So most of your dates.
Wonder Woman underwear.
No, here's the thing. Because as we get older, when you're dating somebody, it's different. When you're dating and there's the possibility or whatever, then, of course, you want to match because you want to look, you know, whatever. But, you know, after you're married and you have kids, and your priorities change. And let me tell you.
That is why you end up with Lanny.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Let me tell you something. No.
You don't take care of
matching
your man.
Bras and underwears is not cheap. It is not cheap.
Well, Renee buys a specific kind of bra.
Well, big old booby women, we have to buy a very specific kind of bra. My bra has to be able to stand up by itself in the corner.
Hers does.
Yeah.
And some bitches are like $50.
Yes.
I mean,
that's ridiculous.
I'll walk around and hold the damn boobs up all day for $50.
Mm. You'd do it for free.
I would
not
do
lie.
It for free. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's expensive and you have other priorities. My
Why
husband
can't
would
you just do some
my
fishing,
just
fishing
happy.
Line.
What?
You know, well, just some fishing line around, wrapping around your
if
neck.
If you ran a hook through
no,
the
I'm not
there,
saying that. No, I'm not saying penetration.
No, but evidently you can get tape that will hold them up
fine.
If you don't want to wear a bra
or
something.
It's like,
you can get
I'm
tape.
Sure they
well,
use
I don't
it.
Know even
the women in UFC probably use
mayonnaise.
That, right?
Huh?
The women in UFC, they probably use
no,
that.
This
beauty
is for,
pageants.
Yeah, women in beauty pageants and that kind of stuff.
Well, like, but how about the women they use a sports bra?
They have a sports bra on.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know. My husband's just happy to see me naked. I don't think he gives a flying shit. Because by the time we go to bed or do anything, my bra is long gone.
And you know the other thing is, women, if you're naked, don't wear socks.
Now, see,
please.
Renee keeps her bra on until she is right about to go to sleep.
When I'm home from work, this bra goes off.
Renee has decided
she throws it out the window on a drive home.
I have been... I'm telling
she
you.
She is Renee has...
Driving home in your Zodiac.
Convinced herself that she can defeat gravity.
No.
The gravity is not going to beat her.
That is not how it works. Now, you don't want to be out jogging without a bra on, but if I'm just wandering around my house in my pajamas picking things up and what, there's no reason for me to have a bra on.
What's more important, really, is big breasts more important to a man than a big dong is to a woman?
Oh, yeah.
Colonel, your opinion?
I don't know, other than Jessica Williams, that women care about really big dongs.
Why would you call her out on that?
Because she has made it a point to say, don't
show
up on my house.
You disclose
a
lot of things about our listeners on this podcast that you probably shouldn't. Continue, Brandy.
She has stated time and time again, don't disappoint when it comes to that area.
I see.
Okay. So
what about you, Devil?
What?
You get all hot and bothered, Dan, somebody whip out a micro penis on you.
Yes.
Now, what are you going to say? Now, are you even going to be polite?
You know what? Here's the thing.
Got an early morning.
Again, I'm married.
No, let's say you're dating. Let's say, okay, finally things get going with Lanny.
Or your economics professor.
Or your economics professor.
Was your economics professor
hung?
Oh,
my God. You know what?
Was he hung?
We're talking about Elizabeth Figg, okay?
Was it microeconomics or macroeconomics?
So poor little Elizabeth Figg. As with many old unsolved cases, there is a discrepancy. Another report says they stumbled across the body of a woman sat up in a small willow tree, her blue and white striped dress torn open to reveal her breast and some scratches on her throat. She had been strangled.
Aww.
I'm sure they probably wrote it off to suicide.
Yeah. Maybe.
4.5 years passed before the discovery of the next victim, with the skeleton of 22-year-old Gwyneth Rees from Wales. She was unearthed during a clearance of the river...
What the fuck is this sentence?
4.5 years passed before the discovery of the next victim, with the skeleton of 22-year-old Gwyneth Rees from Wales was unearthed during the clearance of a River Thames beside garbage dump.
I'd be looking for a fisherman.
Yeah, they just found.
I just tried to strangle myself, and it's impossible to do.
She was last seen getting into a van on September 29th, 1963. She had several missing teeth and was strangled with a ligature.
This
missing teeth thing becomes a deal because they think it was because
he collected trophies?
No, he was forcing himself on them orally.
Ow! Jesus Christ, how hard you got to be to knock somebody's teeth out?
No, but you pull them out. No, you pull out the teeth first, and then there's less of a chance of them biting you.
Yeah, you pull out the teeth.
See, that was my question when they said missing teeth.
Flatten her head and you set a beer on it.
Her nude body was found in a dumpster not far from the Thames in 1963. The cause of death was difficult to ascertain, and homicide investigators later tried to disconnect both the murders from the stripper series. But today, the better evidence suggests that these practice runs, these were the early crimes committed by a killer who had yet to hit his stride. So...
Knocking out teeth?
Yeah.
Man, what if jagged parts in there?
I don't know. I mean, if he's pulling them out.
Yeah, they think that he would also, like we said, a lot of them were found with their panties and that forced down their throat.
Yeah.
So he was like busting them in the chops and then putting their panties in their mouth.
You gotta hit somebody pretty damn hard to knock their teeth out.
And then forcing his...
I bet he didn't put their panties in their mouth first before he forced his pecker in their mouth.
I don't know, but it's not a good...
There wouldn't be a lot of room.
Wasn't a very loving situation there.
Clearly.
A lot of tenderness.
Not a lot of romance there when you're knocking
The investigation teeth out. Was managed by Chief Inspector John DeRose of Scotland Yard. Despite appeals to prostitutes for information on their kinky customers, police were groping in the dark.
Little play on the words there.
That's a lovely really turn of phrase.
Inappropriate.
Thank you there, Colonel.
Inspector John DeRose suggested that the last six victims had been literally choked to death by oral sex.
That shit can be dangerous.
I have to control myself.
it can't be grabbing the back of people's heads now.
No.
Removal of the teeth in four cases, lending a vague support to that hypothesis.
You can only go so far up that road, Colonel.
It's a dead end.
Yeah.
Over the next several years, the police interviewed 7,000 suspects.
Yeah, that's a lot of suspects.
Chief Superintendent DeRose intentionally provided false information to the press in an attempt to force the killer to make a mistake. DeRose falsely told reporters that the investigation had narrowed down the suspect to 20 people, and then three. He did this despite the fact that it was not true and the police were nowhere close to solving the crimes.
Yeah, he was trying
So, hold on. If he's strangling them to death with the Johnson there...
Then why is there ligature marks around her neck?
Number one. Well, and number two, that means he did have to knock the teeth out before they was dead. Because you wouldn't want to be trying to choke somebody to death with your donger there and with a full set of teeth. That'd be poor judgment, but that makes it even worse. I mean, that's some sick shit.
Even though the press conference did not force the killer into making a mistake, it may have served a more important purpose. The stripper did not kill any more women after the initial news conference.
Yeah, because they told him they were close to making an arrest, when really they wasn't.
We're on your ass, stripper.
So, a couple of the suspects here. Number one suspect was Freddie Mills.
And when you say number one, it's just
in on the page.
Yeah, it's not in terms of likelihood.
Okay.
Yeah, and this guy probably most likely was not the killer.
Then why is he included on here?
Because there were a lot of talk. He was someone famous, and there was some speculation that he was.
So, for 20 years, Freddie Mills was one of the best loved figures in British sports. Crowned lightweight champion of the world in 1948, he was a colorful fighter who seemed impervious to pain. What Mills lacked in skill, he more than made up for with aggression and courage.
Sounds like a devil there, doesn't it? While she lacks in skill, she makes up in vulgarity.
Vulgarity and crudeness and just pure hatred.
Actually, really. I think that's a quote from one of our iTunes reviews.
Yeah, well.
So fucking funny.
You have to learn to laugh at yourself, Brandy.
That's all I do is laugh at myself. Let's see. Even after hanging up his gloves to become a club owner and promoter, he remained a darling of the media and a hero to millions. But some believe that Mills was also a cold-blooded killer. In July of 1965, a few months after the last body was discovered, Mills was found slumped in the back of his car in a Soho alleyway. He'd been shot in the head with a small caliber rifle that was resting between his knees. His family and many of his closest friends, who included numerous celebrities and major criminals, including the Cray twins.
Yeah, he was tight with the Cray brothers.
There you go.
Yeah.
And they were upstanding.
Yeah, we almost did a podcast on them a while back.
I thought we did.
We were going to, but it was convoluted. It was a little bit too convoluted. It's kind of like Manson. You'd have to do a multi-part series on it, and I didn't. I wasn't that intrigued.
Oh, so it's all about you.
Yeah, I wasn't that intrigued enough to do the story, but the Cray brothers were...
What are
they
and Brandon?
They were gangsters and...
The gangsters?
Gangsters in London, yeah.
They're OG.
They are OG.
Okay. Let's see. They were convinced OG. He'd been murdered, but police ruled his death a suicide. There was speculation that Mills may have committed suicide because he was afraid he was about to be arrested for the Jack the Stripper murders. However, there is very little evidence that has been made public that links Mills to these crimes. Some believe the rumors were started by others, perhaps the real killer or even the police, in an attempt to put an end to the investigation.
Yeah, I think one of the police officers had mentioned to the press that they were looking at a former boxer. And then this guy is, like, famous, and he kills himself right around the same time. So people started speculating that he was the one. But there really was not a lot of strong evidence that he was the killer. So
let's see. Regardless, after Mills' suicide, the murder stopped. The police investigation into the death of Mills was headed by Leonard Nipper Reed, the detective who...
Nipper?
Nipper. Good old Nipper. He would later bring the Cray twins to justice. While convinced that Mills committed suicide, Reed does not believe he was responsible for the murders. He claims that confusion arose because the chief suspect was revealed to be a married man and a former boxer in his 40s who committed suicide in mid-1965. That man has never been named, except, you know, by Timmy just a minute ago.
Yeah. Always on the cutting edge on the show.
Well, yeah, you are. What did I just watch as Cray Brothers?
I don't know. Cray, they were, you know.
They had a few things.
Yeah, they were notorious gangsters in London.
Oh, no, I was watching Whitechapel, and they did a thing about the Cray Brothers. It was interesting. So now let's talk about security guard Mungo Ireland.
Yeah, he's an interesting suspect.
Well, I think he did it.
Well, with the name Mungo.
His name's Mungo.
Yeah.
A Scottish security guard named Mungo Ireland, whom DeRose first identified in a BBC television interview in 1970.
You know someone named Mungo, they got to be hung. Don't you think so, Colonel?
Well, Mungo, you got to be packing dong to be a Mungo.
Well, He was identified in a BBC television interview in 1970 as a respectable married man in his 40s, whom he codenamed Big John.
See?
Oh, Big he even John. Had a codename.
Oh, yeah.
Big John.
Ireland had apparently been identified as a suspect shortly after Bridget O'Hare's murder when flecks of industrial paint were traced to the Heron Trading Estate, where he worked as a security guard. Apparently, the security guard's nightly rounds included the paint shop, where at least some of the victims were apparently stashed after death.
Yeah, remember those specks of car paint we talked about earlier?
Shortly after the trace was made, Ireland committed suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning, leaving a note for his wife to read, "I can't stick it any longer." I can't stick it any longer. And finished, "To save you and the police looking for me, I'll be in the garage."
So
you can't stick it any
stick
longer.
Stick with it, I guess. But so the evidence against him, of course, was the car paint, because he was a security guard for that garage, and he worked at night when these murders occurred, and did his rounds or whatever, and he committed suicide and left that somewhat. Unclear message why.
While seen by many as a strong suspect in the killings, recent research suggests that Ireland was in Scotland when O'Hara was murdered and therefore could not have been the stripper.
Don't you think it's ironic his last name was Ireland, yet he was in Scotland?
It's the epitome of irony.
Yeah.
Another suspect was an unnamed security guard who was familiar with the area. Although the suspect name has never been disclosed, police know the suspect lived in the area, frequented prostitutes, and had a reputation of being rough with the girls, including choking them to the point where they would pass out.
Yeah, this guy, I think, was, they never named him, but I think that I read that he was actually a police officer.
Well, apparently not enough evidence existed to charge this still unnamed suspect.
So we're down to, we got three suspects, four suspects, none of them sound.
Well, and all of them are dead now because they keep killing themselves.
All of them are dead. Mungo's probably the most likely. But the colonel now has a story of a man who lived in the area where these young ladies died. And it's quite interesting, isn't it, Colonel?
It's fascinating.
All right. Tell us about.
I sure Chuck will fuck that up,
okay,
though.
Okay.
Tell us about Harold Jones.
Sit back and be prepared to be regaled by a fascinating suspect named Harold Jones. Jones had served 20 years in prison for sexually molesting and killing two young girls when he was 15 years old in Arbutlery, Wales. After serving his prison sentence, Jones settled in the Hammersmith district of London. For much of 1921, Abertilly was gripped in horror by the murders of two young girls in the town, Timmy.
Ugh.
This really sad episode is perhaps made worse by the fact that the killer was a 15-year-old boy who was acquitted in a sensational trial after the first murder, only to commit another within days.
Yeah, this is a weird story.
So by he was 19- upstanding.
Now, this is a thriving city.
Yeah, so we're talking Arbutlery. 40 years before the...
1921.
Yeah, 40 years before the Jack the Stripper.
They got
murders.
About 40,000 people living in this town, Arbutlery.
Mm-hmm.
They were packed into its narrow street, and there was mostly coal miners.
Mm-hmm.
And as in most South Wales valley towns, the danger of working underground forged a strong sense of community, Timmy.
That's good. And then they also killed themselves a lot. Remember in Bridgeton?
They did.
Bridgeton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, this community spirit, though, was rocked in 1921 as the town reeled from the realization of one of its own youngsters was responsible for the two heinous crimes of perhaps some of the townspeople themselves had unwittingly played a part in allowing the second to occur. The devil eating a banana. We should do that on Facebook Live.
All right.
On the morning of Saturday, February 5, 8-year-old Frida Burnell of Earl Street went on an errand for her father to buy some chicken feet and spice at Mortimer's Corn Stores.
Yeah, that's a cute little girl, too.
Working at the store was 15-year-old Harold Jones. Jones was a well-behaved lad who was well-liked in the community. He was especially well-liked by his boss. Jones' girlfriend was his boss's 13-year-old daughter. Now, when young Frieda entered the store here, Harold was working alone. He informed young Frieda that the store was out of the feed that her father needed, but if she just followed him up to the next warehouse, he'd get her some.
There you go. He's a helper.
Yeah, so Frieda comes along to the next warehouse, where it's pretty, you know, it's a storage warehouse.
It's on a side street.
It's off by itself. Exactly. It's
deserted. It's like in an alleyway type.
Once inside, Harold brutally raped and murdered the 8-year-old. This is a 15-year-old boy.
15-year-old kid. Yeah.
Now, young Frieda obviously never returned home. Now, her father, Fred, gets worried about her absence. He contacts the police. The police start searching right away. Fred went to the shop to see if she had visited. He runs into 15-year-old Harold, and Harold said, yeah, she was here, but left for about 5 minutes, but left about 10 minutes later. After his shift at the feed store ended, Harold went back to the warehouse, put Frieda's body in a burlap sack, put it in a wheelbarrow, and dumped it into a road leading into town.
Jesus. Yeah, and I mean, the weird thing about this, and you'll get into, is that the town did not want to believe that they wanted to believe it was like some stranger.
They wanted to believe it was an outsider. They couldn't believe one of their own would do something like
exactly.
this.
Exactly.
So anyway, local offices, they started speaking to the locals to see if they could shed any light on Frieda's whereabouts. And they also questioned Harold to see if he could give any clues, but this was to no avail. Harold went to Fred Burnell's house to inquire if Frieda had made it home. Harold, the one who killed her, went to his house. When told she was still missing, Harold went and joined the search party.
Yeah, he's out looking, being helpful.
Meanwhile, as daylight faded, scores of local people were out helping search the streets and adjoining mountainsides for the girl. By midnight, hampered by tiredness and cold weather conditions, the search was called off and resumed at first light the next morning. Now, at about 7:30 the next morning, a passerby found what appeared to be a collection of rags on the ground in the lane running behind Duke Street. Instead, he realized it was no bag of rags, but it was the new body of a young girl, Frieda Burnell. It was clear that Frieda had been subjected to a vicious, brutal attack. Subsequent examinations by the police and doctors revealed that she had died sometime in the morning of the previous day. She had been raped and been strangled to death. Scotland Yard officers were dispatched from London to assist the local police, and by the following Thursday, Harold Jones had been arrested and charged with the murder. A witness claimed to have heard screams coming from the shed that he had taken her to, and Jones had the only key to this shed. But now you got to remember, Jones is dating the owner's daughter.
Yeah, she's only 13. I mean, it's a boyfriend-girlfriend type of thing.
Now, more damningly, a handkerchief used by Frieda was found there together with an axe, which was claimed to have been used in the attack. Now, Jones refuted all claims and denied this murder. Despite the weight of circumstantial evidence against him, he was acquitted at his trial on June 21st, 1921.
He had all these character witnesses that spoke up for him and said, oh, he's such a nice boy. He would never do anything like that, including the owner of
Well, when the owner saw the owner actually testified that Harold was downstairs working at the time.
Yeah, he actually lied under oath saying that Harold was in the store because he didn't think that the kid did it. I mean, you wouldn't think a 15-year-old would do something like
that. Well, and the thing, And they don't know that he actually lied because Harold was under there working, but he just stepped out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he stepped out. So he said, no, he was down here the whole day. And because his view of Harold was he could not do such a thing, he was certain that Harold.
And there was a lot of.
They had a parade. They had a brass band. They carried him down the street when he was acquitted of his first crime.
Yeah, they. They put him on their shoulders and, you know.
Now, 17 days later.
So gross.
The town was going to pay the price for this acquittal. Not everyone was convinced of his innocence, including 11-year-old Florrie Little. She confronted Harold on the street and told him to his face that she knew he killed her young friend, Freda. And that did not make Harold happy.
She had balls. That little
yes, she did.
Balls.
Well, they didn't know if she was just being a little brat or if she knew something. Or
yeah, she was kind of taunting.
Kind of taunting.
Yeah.
But late in the evening of Friday, July 8th, he somehow lured 11-year-old Flory, who had just lived three doors down, into his home. He attacked the girl with unimaginable brutality and concealed her body in the attic. One of the things he did to this girl, Timmy, is he got her in a... jerked her over the kitchen sink and cut her throat.
Yeah, and he had let her bleed out.
He let her bleed out so there would not be blood everywhere.
Yeah, it's gross.
So he's learning.
Yeah, now this time...
And he's a 15-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Gross.
This time, though, escape from justice was not going to be possible for Harold. With the body in the attic and his parents having returned home, he was effectively trapped. Still, he held his nerve and assisted police in the search for the girl on the streets.
Because he's a helper, Brandy.
He is a helper.
However, the police started to conduct house-to-house searches, and when the Jones house came up, Philip said, "Come on in." The father.
Yeah, the father said, "Come on in, take
Jones
a look around."
Jones said, "Well, you know, I got to run down to the store, and I'm going to just step out for a little bit." And as the search progressed through the house, they found Flory's nude body. His father went after him and apprehended him on the streets.
Yeah, and his father says, "Look, they found this little girl dead in our house. Now, one of us is going to go to jail."
Yeah, his father was like, "Yeah, no, that's what his father was like." His father was like, "Nope, no, they ain't hanging this shit on me, son." Now, Flory had also been raped and strangled, but there was now pandemonium in the town as the news spread. Jones was sent for a second trial, again at Monmouth, at which time he confessed. Remarkably, he also gave a second statement, although not in court, in which he admitted to the murder of Freda Burnell. And the reason he did this is he was under 16 by 2 months.
Yeah.
So if the trial would have gone on and he would have been found guilty.
Yeah, 3 months later.
3 months later, he was going to be 16. They could have hung his ass.
Right.
But he escaped the hangman's noose by virtue of his age.
Yeah, he confessed while he was still 15.
And he gave the reasons for murder as a desire to kill. And by all, you know, he doesn't fit the profile of anything because he had a good childhood. He was well-liked. He was outgoing.
Yeah,
he
no evidence of abuse or anything like that.
He's a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
He's kind of a dick, 15-year-old.
Yeah,
he's a dick.
He even bragged to the papers about how he outfoxed the police. I had only read of Scotland Yard men before. Now I had seen them in the flesh and beat them, he added. I watched Frida's funeral. I played billiards. I ate and slept as usual. As to why he killed a second time, Jones said quickly as the lightning flashes, the demon in me had his power again. Is that how it happens with you, devil?
You know what? First of all, let me tell you something.
Lightning flashes and the demon has its power in
you? The people in that town are just as much to blame because the one guy lied for him. And I'm sorry. They had a parade for him and carried him around to their shoulders. Give me a break.
Oh, they knew they was to blame.
They needed to know that they were to blame.
So he said this demon inside him commanded him to kill, and he did. He was sentenced to prison and served 20 years. He was finally released from jail in December 1941 after his 45-year parole review, at which point he was paroled and he vanished. His incarceration removed him from the streets of Arbertilly, though it is claimed by some that he was to return on several occasions in later years. Chillingly, Jones was said to often return to the scene of his crimes. He'd sometime would visit his parents' house, and the sound of him playing the organ in their front room would haunt the streets, all of which would be empty as mothers kept their children safe indoors until he had gone away. It is known that Harold Jones lived in the Hammersmith area at the time of Jack the Stripper murders, but he was never questioned in the case. Now, he died from cancer in 1971, lies buried in the Hammersmith Cemetery in West London. One of the Hammersmith murders officially remains open and unsolved.
So, Brandy, so this guy seems like a likely suspect. I mean, he lived... I don't think it was in there, Colonel, but he lived, the first victim, he lived like three doors down. I mean, in the 1960s or 1959, Fig, he lived like three doors down from her. And then two of the later victims, he lived like two blocks away. So the creek was in the neighborhood anyway. Brandy, what's your thoughts on the Jack the Stripper?
Again, some of the police work is not up to par.
Do you favor any suspect over?
It's probably that dipshit.
Harold Jones?
Yeah.
I thought that guy, that Mungo, the security guard that also had access to the garage where they found the paint,
You think he's a good suspect?
Yeah, except I don't know the time frame when they're saying he was out of the country when one of the crimes were committed. But with this Harold Jones character in the neighborhood, he kind of disappeared.
He kind of came and went.
Yeah. He was...
You never knew where Harold was. Yeah. And it's interesting that the police never questioned him.
Yeah, and he was, I think, Brandy, you mentioned they interviewed 7,000 suspects, but, they didn't have really a good database or anything track people. So he wasn't one of the ones of the 7,000 that they interviewed, but had they known he lived in that area at the time, he would seem like he would go right
you
up to
hope.
The, you'd think he'd go right up to the top of the suspect list. How about you, Colonel? Who?
Oh, I think it was Harold.
Yeah, that creepy guy.
Because he was a guy who just liked killing.
Yeah. Yeah, from an early age.
Yeah, I mean, if he was... Now, you think about it, a kid's heart.
They said
enough.
He was a model prisoner, though, when he was in prison.
Well, he was a model citizen before he killed the kids,
though. He would never talk to a psychiatrist or anything, though, in prison.
And well, he had it together.
Well, they said that he never dealt with any of his issues, and he just kind of, did what he was... the minimum of what he was expected to do, and eventually he got paroled. But they let out. He went in as a kid who killed, and when he got out, he was married for a while. And
to Mythic Jones.
And he died in 1971 of cancer. Okay.
I don't feel bad about that.
Any final thoughts on Jack the Stripper, Brandy?
No. I don't feel bad that he died.
Yeah, I don't either. Chuck, any final thoughts?
Unoriginal name. I thought they could have done better.
Then Jack, yeah. The Ripper, and it gets used a lot, though.
But you're knocking out people's teeth and choking them to death with your pecker. I mean, they could come up with something like that.
It was called the Hammersmith Nude Murders. That wasn't very creative.
The pecker killer?
The Johnson Strangler.
Yeah, that would have been good.
The Johnsonville Strangler?
Okay, yeah. Colonel.
I mean, think about that. You would have to knock all the teeth out. I mean, you couldn't. And if they said he's choking him to death like that, but then they got rope marks around the neck. So does he? I guess the only thing you could come to the conclusion, if I were the detective on this case, is that he was strangling them.
If you were the dick.
If I was the top dick on this.
Well.
He was strangling them till... If you think about it, he'd have to strangle them until they were unconscious. Then he would finish them off that way. But he couldn't do that while they were conscious.
Seems like a lot of work to me. I can never be a serial killer.
Mm-hmm. And plus, Mr. Johnson, you're going to need to whip it out. We're going to need to see if it's big enough to strangle somebody with.
Colonel.
That's where it would come in handy to have a tiny one, Tim. Having the micro penis would get you off the hook on this.
And Brandy, I don't think so.
Brandy, is there any chance that he'll ever get to shout outs?
No. I don't think so, because I think as soon as you prove he has a micro penis, you prove that there's some rage.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, what's he strangling
him? There's nothing more, nothing that will create rage in a man and in a woman than a micro penis.
Oh yeah,
a surprise micro penis.
Yeah. You should never surprise people.
A man should never be surprised if he has a micro penis, but a woman sometimes may be surprised. Okay, Colonel, shout outs.
Okay, let's start our shout outs. Of course, we got Tasha, lovely Tasha, and Miss Ophelia
out there in California.
And apparently Tasha's a tall lady because she said in China she could take on those Amazon women.
Cool.
Jeff Girdley. Yeah. Sam Hildebrand. of course, Jennifer and Linda. We covered them before, but we'll give them one more. Missy Dean Horton, Britt and Chris, Celine, of course, Dr. Jeff Chestnut.
And Don, his lovely wife.
And Don Chestnut. Teresa Slavin, Tommy, of course, Boomer Shine, Olivia Meyer, Shonda and Larry, Colton, Phyllis Munson, Aaron Wentz, Donna Curran, the Trowbridges, all three of them, Linda Clark and Diane. Let's see, who we got? Of course, the lovely Katja, Kate McCarthy, Bridget Clavey, Byron Snellings, Denny McNamara.
Yes, from Norwood, Ohio.
William Truax, lovely Amber Crew, Gina Spillane, I'm sorry, Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney and Michael, Jamie Tarantino, Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, John Cunningham, Tara.
Bond.
Jean Bond.
Lydia. New listener, Timmy, new to the group at least, Neil Eagleton.
Welcome, Neil.
And Natasha Davis.
And welcome, Natasha.
And Robin Sanchez. She's been around the group a little bit, I believe.
How you doing, Robin?
TJ Youngblood.
Hey, TJ.
Thomas Tui. Nicholas Starr. Steve Miller. Angie Drake.
Hey, Angie.
Angie Drake wanted to know why you said she would write letters to Charlie Manson.
Yeah.
Because just, Tim shuts off, shoots
I'm
off his mouth.
I'm just messing with you, Angie.
Yeah, we wouldn't do that.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, he would. Becky Mitchell, Keith Frusty, and Cheryl, she told me how to pronounce her name. I said Musco. It's like must go. Cheryl Musco. Andy Volley, Marvin Hammond, and Mary Ray. Jeff Appel, Maggie Glover, Brandy McBride, Christine
Bourgeois.
There we go. Let's see, Timmy. Kelsey Froh, Amber Anderson, Danielle Fredrickson, Christian Dormer, Emmy, little Emmy Waterfall.
Hey, Emmy.
Susan Angles, Kristen Davidson, Don Gordon, John Gray, Dave Hill. And, hey, while you're in the kitchen, Katie, could you bring me...
Moorhead.
Katie Moorhead, how you doing?
Jesus.
Never gets old, does it?
It's time
you know, we go to the grocery store, and I maybe I've said this before.
Probably.
But if any of me and my boys are in a grocery store with Renee and we get to the produce section, we got to grab a kiwi and a banana. We got to grab one and say, hey, Nene, look at this. And she never laughs.
Yeah.
Never, ever laughs. And then, you know, I'll wait till she gets like 10
it's
feet away.
It's shocking that she would never laugh.
But, you know, it's funny stuff because you get like 10 feet away from her and you pick up some cantaloupes. And you're like, Nay, how you like these melons? These melons okay? Should I get these melons? These melons seem firm enough?
It seems like your kids shouldn't be doing that. That seems odd.
Oh, we have a good time at the grocery store.
Oh, clearly.
So... Kate McCarthy,
weirdo.
Did I get her?
Yep.
And lovely Katja. Rebecca Montanle, Mike Eisenhower, Danielle Fredrickson, Andy Sparaccio, Toby Deese, Nancy Palomino.
Hey, Nancy.
Nancy got a big week coming up. Her husband's a huge Raiders fan. She's a huge Chiefs fan.
Yeah, Raiders.
I say,
are in
now I already
spot.
Said go Chiefs, so I can say this. They're both going to be gone after the first week.
Yeah, they don't have a Raiders don't have a quarterback. They're in a tough spot.
Kim Kazmersky Kamikaze, Tara Chinchilla, Jennifer Hawkins, Sonyana, Eddie Rushing, Yo Handler, Sammy James, Jason Dykes, my buddy, Amy Carroll Payne.
Jason and I are Facebook friends, and he posts some of the funniest shit.
Mm-hmm. Really he funny. Does post funny stuff.
Yes. But and none of it indicates that him and Chuck are friends.
Nah, I don't think he was friends with Chuck. Who would?
We are friends.
All right.
Jason, me and Jason.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. If it makes you feel better.
Very funny guy, Jason. I really like your post. Really cool.
We're friends.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. We believe you, Colonel.
That's all I'm saying.
Jeez.
Tyra Jenkins.
Not a chance in hell.
No.
Alan Dobbs.
Sounds desperate.
George Hugler. Carlene Madison. Annette Petre.
From the Bronx.
From the Bronx. Steph Glenn. Christina Hodgins. Christine Montana. Maria Barbara. Jennifer Potts. Sydney Hamilton. Paul Manpilli. Mike Arnold. Brittany Powell. Heather Hall. Heather Poole. Andaza. Jeff Hopkins. Mike Tabor. Lise. Terry Helmsley. Heather Marshall. Maddie Kennan. Amelia Roscoe. Michael Daniel. Jim Moore, of course. Lovely Liz Evans, Jessica Bishop, Brenda Deutsch, Stacy Lynn, Jeffrey Dolan, Miriam Buchwald, Jennifer Williams Miller, Suzanne Winans. Sheldon.
Jennifer Winans Miller.
What did I say?
Williams.
Oh, Jennifer Williams Miller.
Winans.
Okay. Okay.
Well, why do you keep saying Williams?
Jennifer Winans.
Thank you.
Miller.
Jesus Lord.
Skip Fayou. Callie Jones, Brandy Deese, Norma DiMaggio, Karen Alden, Angie L., Amber Trevino, the lovely Carla Nelson, Jessica Winchester, she just is a new one, and Anita Darden, I believe, is new, Nancy Weller, let's see, we got the Colonel squad up here, Angie Ball, even though she's going to crush me, she told me the other day why. Step, tread lightly, little man.
Nice.
Wise.
Sarah Mimosa Spaghetti. Jennifer Burdick. Karen Barnes.
You just slaughter people's names. It just doesn't matter.
They know who they are.
Oh.
Janet Fitzgerald. Frances Doughton. Jessica Williams. Amanda Bocciball. Shannon Rossett, of course, Tiffany Bell, Monica D'Agostino.
Very nice.
Angela Cobes, Radhika Smith. I wonder how Radhika, I haven't heard from her for a while.
I know, Radhika, give us, say something on the page. We haven't heard from you for a while. I hope everything is, I think she liked something the other day. So.
Liz Keating, the official mascot of Team Colonel. Lovely Fallon Holloway.
Yes. Lovely Fallon from Texas.
From Texas. Nicola, of course, my trusted solicitor. And Allie, my batshit crazy enforcer, who is pretty certain she's going to be married to...
Prince William.
Prince William. Harry. You know what we're going to do? In July, we're going to get a tiara for Allie.
Very good.
We're going to make her a princess.
And do you have any more?
Of course. We got Lady Beverly.
Mm-hmm. Lady Beverly. Who? Thank you, Lady Beverly, for the Christmas card. It was very sweet.
It was wonderful.
Of you. Thank you very much.
Yes, it was. And lovely Dottie Scott.
Thank you, Mom. Brandy, where can people find us?
They can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, join our group on Facebook. It's History Dweebs, the podcast. All the folks we give shout-outs to here are part of that group, and we interact. We have a lot of fun. So join us as History Dweebs, the podcast page.
You can find us on iTunes.
iTunes. Please leave us a positive review if you can. That would be lovely. We had a very nice review just recently. We want to thank the person who did that, said that we keep them laughing. And we always love to hear that. So thank you very much, Karen Alden, for your kind remarks. So it helps people find us when we get reviews. So if you're listening to us on iTunes, please subscribe and leave us a review.
And you can find us on Twitter.
Yeah, at HistoryDweebs1. You can follow us on Twitter. If you want to follow the Colonel, it's Hawk Waters. That's HawkWalters.
Mm-hmm.
At Hawk Waters.
Yes, and then Stitcher and Libsyn.
Yes, you can Stitcher or any of the podcast apps, you can find us. And if you want to get our full inventory of podcasts, You can check, go to libsyn.com. It's libsyn.com. And just search History Dweebs, and you'll find a category of all of our podcasts. iTunes only, I think, only goes back for a year or so. So we have, there's 2 years of podcasts out there for your listening enjoyment. Anything else, Brandy? We get out of here?
No, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.